From WXXI News, I'm Michelle Faust, and this is Connections Healthy Friday. Today, our connection goes back to 2007, when 12-year-old Diamante Driver complained to his mother of a toothache. His mother lacked both medical and dental coverage, and the boy's tooth went untreated. The pain was caused by an abscessed tooth, and the young Maryland boy's infection eventually traveled to his brain and killed him. A report from Kaiser Family Foundation shows tooth decay is the most common chronic illness among school-aged children across the country. This hour, we'll make links between oral health and the overall physical and mental health of the body. Not only for children, but for adults and the elderly as well. In Rochester, the Eastman Institute for Oral Health was established 100 years ago, and that was to improve community access to dental health services. In studio, we'll have representatives from Eastman Dental. They're here to talk to us about what happens in the mouth and how it affects the rest of the body. I'd like to welcome Dr. Eli Eliav. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Dr. Carlo Ercoli. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And Dr. Abra Carocci.
Thank you for being here.
Welcome. So I want to read, to get started in our conversation today, something that I read in a bulletin of the World Health Organization. It says, the compartmentalization involved in viewing the mouth separately from the rest of the body must cease because oral health affects general health by causing considerable pain and suffering and by changing what people eat, their speech, and their quality of life and well-being. I want you to kind of talk to us about that in general. I mean, would you agree with that statement from the World Health Organization, Dr. Eliav?
I do. I do agree. I think that separating the oral cavity from the body is a big mistake. The same mechanism, the same pathophysiology happens in the oral cavity. The fact that we have teeth and certain disease, which is specific for the oral cavity, the caries, doesn't mean that there aren't other diseases in the oral cavity or effect of chronic inflammation in the oral cavity. The connection between the cardiac diseases and oral health is well known now, but it's way beyond that. There are other diseases that the first signs are in the oral cavity. For example, HIV infection, the first sign is the oral cavity, dermatological diseases, and others. So this separation is absolutely a mistake. And what we do, we try to make the connection. We try to see the overall health of our patients.
Why does this happen? I'm gonna ask you, Dr. Oakley, if you could chime in first. Why do you think that this happens, especially in the United States? You know, that's a country that we're in right now. A lot of this separation between oral health and the rest of health. And you see your physician, you see your dentist, and you don't necessarily have the connection between the two.
Well, I think some of that might be historical due to the separation sometimes between the two professions. But at the same time, it might be due also to the nature of third-party payers, which of course are divided into a medical health and, of course, those that will have coverage for a dental type of procedure. And unfortunately, at times we forget that the two parts, they do come attached in the same human being. So that certainly is one of the factors. I would say that certainly the connections are there. In fact, you mentioned the World Health Organization, which actually states that a person without teeth is classified actually as an amputee. So that gives a new dimension, of course, of not having teeth and what that can do for our health in general.
I think that's a very interesting classification, and that's something that I don't think most people make that connection. Some people think that, you know, by the end of your life, you lose your teeth, and that's just the way that it is. I mean, what are your thoughts, Dr. Carocci?
I agree, and you can imagine the impact that the person without a teeth would have. You know, decreased the ability to eat a lot of different meals, and would affect their nutrition, would affect their smile, would affect the ability to get a job and to express themselves as a person. So you cannot separate. You know, the first thing you look in the people, usually it their smiles. So it have a huge implication, not only physically, but emotionally for the patients as well. And you see this every day, you know, when you treat a person that have a beautiful smile now, how much effect they have in the overall oral health for the person.
Let's start with children, because that was the example that I gave in our introduction. This situation, very, very sad situation, used often when people are talking about situation of healthcare and the cost of dental care, the situation with a 12-year-old Diamante Driver who died of that abscess. First of all, can we say that that is something that's common? I mean, we don't hear all the time of a child dying from a tooth infection.
Well, we would love to say that that's not common, but the reality is that it's very common to have a tooth abscess. As we see, we are in a region that is very well served. We have over 700 private dentists, and they have Eastmond, and they have other institutions, and we still see. I'm in the pediatric department, one of the residents there, and every single day we see kids that come with untreated tooth decay that now in abscess. And we see then also the URMC, and that is not only a cost associated for the family, but for the whole society that is paying for those treatments. And for the child, you know, how many days of school this child is going to lose? It's going to affect her nutrition when they need the most. Then their growth, development, it's going to affect their speech. It's going to affect the way they interact with other kids. So the oral health impact on the overall health of individual cannot be separated and cannot be diminished, because we know that is huge.
I think it's interesting when you mention that, when you talk about pediatric dentistry. I've heard people say, and I don't, maybe mm-hmm. you've heard this, I think as dentists, maybe you haven't heard this, but people say, why worry about the kids' teeth? They get a second chance. Yeah. They'll lose those teeth and they'll get more. And you all are shaking your heads no. I'm going to have you all chime in, but I'll start with you, Dr. Karoche.
Well, like I mentioned before, you know, affecting your nutrition. What's the impact of affecting nutrition? How many kids we see that they have, you know, now a liquid diet because they cannot have solids? And how are you going to have a kid eating vegetables if you cannot chew anything hard in their mouth? So you have this, you have the emotional effect and the way they interact with the other kids in school. But to keep this space, you know, the primary teeth is not only to serve for that particular time. We have 20 primary teeth, but they're also saving the space for the adult dentition to come in the right place. And once you lose a premature loss of the tooth, that means you have a disease, that means it lost your school days and effect and cost for your family or to society. But also, that space have a tendency to close. So when the adult teeth trying to come in doesn't have a place to go. And then the cost associated with that, with the braces later on, with the smile, with ability to get employment later on, it's huge. And that's why if you have there, you know, it's twice a day, brush twice a day for 2 minutes. We ask the kids to do this all the time, and you're going to save a lot of money and save a lot of smiles too.
So you all shook your head no about this. You get a second chance after you lose your kid's teeth, and then they have a second chance with their adult teeth. You said no. You didn't like that idea. Dr. Elioff, can you tell us why?
I think that Tabra summarized it very well. Infection in primary teeth or deciduous teeth can affect the development of the permanent teeth. Beyond that, any infection may affect the entire body. And another thing that we don't think about routinely is 20% of acute pains, if they are not treated, can turn into chronic pain. And a chronic pain is another disease. So beyond the fact, the emotional effect and the self-confidence and the interaction with the world, there is maybe some long-term results from not treating the deciduous teeth.
Yeah. So long-term pain is because you'll have those chronic pain problems. I thought the nutrition angle was also very interesting. I mean, what are some of the consequences? You're talking about growth, but really what is that going to mean for the child on the long-term health if they have consequences from poor nutrition? Would you like to join us, Dr. El-Khali?
Yes, I think there are a couple of ways in addition to Dr. Aliyev and Abra has mentioned. One also is related to the experience that the patient have. Is I think we all agree that it is positive for the child to be associated with a dental visit, positive one, of course, as early as possible. Because generally we all have heard of stories, maybe unpleasant stories of the dentist, and generally they will connect to maybe a early childhood experience which was not a positive one. So certainly we want to be there to help the child you know, as soon as possible. But you mentioned the nutrition, and that certainly has a major impact. We know that an individual, for example, with just dentures, will have a third to a fifth of the chewing efficiency, we call it, the ability to masticate food. And it will generally then resort to a diet which is much richer in sugars, in less nutritious type of food, which, of course, can affect the overall health. So the ability of the person to actually properly select and chew their food is of paramount importance then to affect the overall health in general.
It's interesting that you're saying, you know, we're talking about nutrition in children, but that'll affect your nutrition throughout your life if you're having problems with your teeth at any age.
Absolutely. You know, you will have that also in adult. I mean, adults that, let's say, are generally without teeth or with a poor dentition will tend to choose foods that maybe are easy to chew, but not necessarily as nutritious as fibers, you know, maybe rich in protein and other, of course, nutrients that we all need. And in fact, you know, as part of our treatment at times, we have to counsel the patient whenever we provide treatment to then go back to a more of a healthier diet than maybe they had previously, because now they might have the means, i.e. the teeth, to actually chew their food more efficiently.
So what kind of advice should we be giving parents who are listening right now and thinking, okay, I have a young child, when should I start bringing him into the dentist? What kind of things can I say to them, or how can I make this be a positive association? I think it's really interesting. I'll give you a personal experience. My mom took me to the dentist when I was very young. My mom was a dental assistant when she was very young. I was friends with the dentist. So I have a very positive association with dentistry to this day. I am a minority among the people that I speak to about that. So how do we start out well, Dr. Carucci?
I look like turn out well for you. I have a beautiful smile. And that's the kind of experience that we want to have with the kids. You know, if you bring a child for the first time when they're in pain to see a stranger, that you're going to put her laying down and look at her mouth on the place that they're already in pain, this relationship would be a very negative one. And then you bring them again when they have another pain. So you can imagine the psychological impact. Like Dr. Erkley mentioned, they have, you know, they affect the rest of their life, the way they perceive dentistry and how they're going to seek care. And unfortunately, in dentistry, when you postpone treatments, the treatment become more and more expensive. And then you have it becomes prohibitive because financially. So what we want to do, we want to see a child before their first birth or when they have their teeth coming in, that usually 6 months or can be a little bit late. And then we would talk to the parents. We're going to look their nutrition and give advice in preventing kids from having to sleep with the bottle with the milk through the night, to prevent early childhood caries, and monitor the kid. If you see any decay, we'll be able to treat in the very early stages. There is no anesthesia associated with that, so the kids has a pleasant experience. And it goes and it becomes a very costly efficient for the parents as well, and prepare them for the rest of their lives to have a health relationship with a very important part of their body, that's their mouth.
It's funny because you mention cost. And I think, mm-hmm. you know, especially in this country, cost associated with dental care is one of the reasons why people don't go to the dentist or don't go as often as they should or don't go until things are quite extreme and they can't sleep because of the pain. Dr. Eliev, what are some of the solutions? I mean, we've got a solution through a partial solution through what we have here with Eastman, but we don't have Eastman throughout the country.
No, we don't have Eastman throughout the country, but we do try to provide care to unserved population. And this is the main thing. We need to help people that cannot get the help. So we have a set of smile mobiles, we call them. It's trucks that we station next to schools, and we provide care to the kids there. We now just got a wonderful gift from, we can mention the name, Joe Labazzo, and we have a real smile mobile that it's a car, it's a truck with dental units on it, and we can go anywhere we're needed to provide care. One or that we have a total of four trucks, that's not enough. We need to have more to be able to provide care and to those that need care. However, I have to say that I moved here from New Jersey, and the Medicaid support for treatment is wonderful in New York. It's much better than in any other place that I've seen. So we are doing better, but not doing enough.
Okay, so. One thing I wanted to mention is something that I saw in numerous studies that I was looking at to prepare for this, and I'm just going to go back to the Kaiser Family Foundation study that I mentioned before, and they said that this chronic illness of school-age children with tooth decay, it is a problem that doubles in situations and triples, and it gets very, very high rates when you go into low-income households. We have a very large population of people who are low-income in our area. Among African-American children, the rate is higher. Among Latino children, the rate are higher. What can we do to kind of make dental, oral health more of a priority and address access throughout all racial and socioeconomic backgrounds?
We have to try and approach those that cannot get have the access, and this approach should be a more global approach. It cannot be only come from the university, and that's why we try to partner with other organizations. How we can get there? I heard about Eastman Institute for Oral Health many years ago when I was in a different country, and I didn't know the level of community service we do here. It's huge, but it's really, really way far from where it should be. And this approach should come from higher levels than Rochester only. It's not a Rochester problem. It's a nationwide problem. We have to partner with other organizations and try to approach the kid, provide the care and the screening as soon as possible. Dr. Carucci mentioned, if the experience that the kid has, that when they go to the dentist when they have pain, all they have in their mind is, whenever I see this person, it's painful. We have to go to preventive approach. And I think we are beginning to see it more and more, but it's not enough, way not enough.
Well, we've been talking about preventative health with a lot of the issues coming up with the Affordable Care Act and trying to push people to get help before they have a problem. There's differing degrees of how well that's working right now. How is the Affordable Care Act helping with oral health?
I think we have not seen yet maybe a large increase or an increase into the number of individuals that will seek maybe care as a result of the affordability, the options that the Affordable Care Act will certainly provide. I think is probably more relevant for children related to some of the characteristics of the act rather than for adults. But we're certainly positioned to help the community eventually take advantage of these opportunities that are provided by the legislator. I think going back to your previous question as well, it is important to involve the community, maybe through community organizers. And I think that was the philosophy, actually, of our Smile Mobile. For those of the listeners that are not familiar, these are actually trucks, as Dr. Aliyev mentioned, that will actually go and sit outside schools, where actually children will be, for lack of a better term, a captive audience. And then we will treat them, right there, rather than ask them. Sometimes children might not have a mean of transportation. I have a single mother, a single parent. So we try to be there in the community to affect the individual right in the environment where they live. But I fully agree with Dr. Aliyev, that's a long journey. It's an effort that has to certainly have other approaches as well.
Okay. We're talking about oral health and the connections to your physical health and your entire body. That's today on Connections Healthy Friday. You can join the conversation by giving us a call at 1-844-295-TALK, 1-844-295-8255. We're going to take a break for just a moment, and we hope to hear from you in the meantime. You're listening to member-supported public radio. This is Connections Healthy Friday. I'm Michelle Faust. Coming up on Connections Healthy Friday, we'll review recent healthcare headlines. We'll explain what narrow networks are in New York State and look at what cyber attacks will mean for health insurers across the country. Finally, we'll have a preview of a documentary series, Cancer, the Emperor of All Maladies, airing later this month on WXXI Television. It's all coming up in the second hour of Connections Healthy Friday.
Reporter Ethel Payne's pointed questions won her attention and access as one of the first black journalists to get a White House press pass.
I was not there for decoration. I was there to get information, dispense it, and to ask probing questions.
Her story later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on your NPR News station.
Thanks for joining us for Connections Healthy Friday right here on WXXI. Give us a call if you have any questions about oral health, your own oral health, or that of your children, and how it can affect your long-term health throughout your body and your mental health. 1-844-295-TALK, 1-844-295-8255. And if you prefer to tweet us, my Twitter handle, at MICHE Reports. Now, we're in the studio right now with Dr. Eli Eliav, Dr. Carlo Ercoli, and Dr. Abra Carocci, and they're all from Eastman Institute of Oral Health. We've been talking about how a problem in your mouth can become a much bigger problem throughout your body. We've been talking mostly about children. I wanted to say, you know, how effective do you think the outreach really is working to get enough kids involved in coming to, whether it be the Smile Mobile or coming into the clinics? Are you seeing that things are working, or would you like to see more kids coming through that pipeline, Dr. Carocci?
Well, we definitely would like to see more kids. We find out that even with those Smile Mobiles and all the overreach that we do in the community, we still have, we need to have the parents to buy in. We are only seeing 30% of the population that needs care. So, and we see people that need so much care that all sides of their mouth are infected. They have abscess, they have untreated decay. And those kids are going to school still. And then once we treat them, they make a huge difference in their lives. With the Smile Mobiles, you're going out there, reaching them. We are filtering, we're triaging those that need more care, and those that need more care we bring to the Eastman Dental. But we need to have the parents to be involved, the parents to buy in. We have a huge problem, the parents to provide consent to see their kids, and that end up being have a lot of negative consequence for the oral health of that child.
Why do we believe that is? Why are we not getting the consent forms? It seems like if you've got a service that's free or mostly free and it's beneficial to the child's health, I don't see why that would be a problem.
Well, I think Dr. Eliav and Dr. Ercoli mentioned before, you know, like, what's the prisma that the parents have? They had probably themselves bad experience with dentists. So they think that, you know, it's a baby tooth. It isn't going to fall off and then another tooth is going to grow. So we need to have, you know, overreach in terms of educating and see the parents that the parents can understand that we are there to help. We are there to help. And every parent, you know, they want the best for their kids. And if they're able to understand that we really care about them and we are there to help them, I think they would be able to buy in. But they still need to more work on that.
We have a caller in, Mary from the city. If you'd like to join and do like Mary, give us a call at 1-844-295-TALK, 1-844-295-8255. Mary, what's your question?
Hi. I'm calling because I just found recently out that about fillings, as far as them having mercury in them, the amalgams. I also heard that you can do something called resin instead. I don't even know what that has in it as far as any chemicals or what it has. I had cancer a year ago, and so I pretty much, you know, eat healthy foods, raw fruits and vegetables, grass-fed meats. So I don't want to put any of, I mean, I already have a ton of silver fillings in my body from when I was little. So I just feel like that's a huge concern.
Well, and we'll be talking more about cancer in the next hour, but what are in fillings? Should people be concerned, Dr. Ercoli?
Mary, thanks for your question. I think that probably you shouldn't be as concerned as you might be regarding mercury in the fillings. Actually, we are fortunate at the university to have one of our colleagues, Dr. Jean Watson, which has been investigating this this factor. And indeed, you know, mercury is quite common in individuals that will have a diet rich of fish. And the amount of release of mercury from the filling that you might currently have in your mouth might actually be quite negligible. So I will not worry about that. And in fact, a lot of mercury might be released if some of those fillings are actually removed or when they are removed. So I will certainly, you know, counsel you to eventually speak with your dentist and eventually if those fillings are removed because of a dental reason, let's say you have a cavity or you need some additional work, that proper precaution are taken to, of course, suction and remove the fillings as it is removed. But otherwise, I will probably not be tremendously concerned, especially for your systemic health.
Now, she mentioned eating well and taking care of herself to prevent cancer and to prevent that from coming back. What should we be considering when it comes to making sure that our oral health is doing well? Should we be considering nutrition? I mean, I think everyone knows they should be brushing twice a day at the minimum. They should be flossing. But what else could we be doing?
The oral health is associated with nutrition as the same as any other part of the body. You can add the fact of having sweets and sugars that may affect the teeth, but anything else beyond that, nutrition may affect the entire body and the oral cavity. There is no difference between the two. Things that we should consider and think about is the composite or the things that are included in our saliva, but that's related to general nutrition or whatever we consume is not different than the rest of the body.
So I just got a tweet from a person named Mel who's saying that she'd like to see. She's a pediatric dental hygienist, and she says that she would like to see more collaboration between dentist and pediatrician. Do you see that there's enough collaboration? What's your perspective, Dr. Kurochi?
If I understood the question correctly, she would see more collaboration between the general dentist and the pediatric dentist?
Or pediatric dentists, yeah. and pediatricians.
Yeah. You know, every time you go out there on the real world, so-called, that you have a private practice, it's very common for the dentist, the general dentist, to have those ties. They have ties with the endodontist, the people that do root canal, the oral surgeons, the dentists that remove teeth, and they always have a relationship with the pediatric. For general dentists, you know, they should love the pediatric dentist because we get the kids and we help them to have a good experience with the pediatric with the dentist and prepare them for to see the general dentist later. I'm sure that there's a lot of room to improvement. Sure that there's a lot of room to this collaboration. I think maybe Dr. Eliab can give some insights.
Yeah, on that. Our residency program in pediatric dentistry affiliated with the pediatric department, the Children's Hospital, Golisano Children's Hospital in URMC. We work together. They rotate through medicine or pediatric clinics. Beyond that, we are opening, there is a plan to open a center that will have a collaboration of pediatrics and pediatric dentistry, which I think this is the right direction. I agree with the person who asked the question. We should work together. It's for the benefit of our patients, no doubt.
Yeah. Now, we also wanted to talk about some of the effects and the association between mental health and your oral health. And I thought it was interesting, Dr. Croce, you brought it up a couple of times about people who maybe are afraid to smile. And this is something that I've seen plenty of times. I've known people, oh, don't take my photo because I don't want to smile. Or they'll take a photo, but they won't smile. And they always look angry in their photos or whatever it is because they have some sort of a problem. They're worried about people looking at their teeth wrong. What is that association between people's self-image, their self-concept, and their mental health and their oral health. I mean, do you see a connection there, Dr. Ercoli?
Well, we certainly see the impact that oral health and having a beautiful smile and a comfortable diet will have on your well-being, on your interaction with others. So that's a common factor. And also we see in some of our developmentally disabled individuals, especially children, that their oral health is vastly affected, and of course in a negative way. There are many children that are treated, some of them that might have indeed some mental problems that we do take care of, but many others are to be treated. And of course, our resources are somehow limited, and as Dr. Alia was saying, more has to be done in this area. But we do certainly see a connection between mental health and oral health, and again, in a negative terms.
Dr. Kurochi, you've worked with people who have developmental disabilities, and I know that Eastman has some outreach programs that specifically work with people with developmental disabilities. First of all, what is that association, and what are some of the causes of people who have developmental disabilities and having issues with their oral hygiene?
Well, it's a huge problem. There's so many levels that they have to be addressed. The Surgeon General in 2000, when they did a survey with the people with intellectual disability, they found that they have the significant or higher rates of poor hygiene. They have increased number of periodontal treatment, need for gum treatment, inadequate access to care, and inadequate access to trained dentists. To be able to address the care. You can imagine if you have a dentist that they're not trained to treat people with intellectual disability while you're in dental school, doesn't forge this relationship with this population, you can imagine how hard it is for this dentist when he's out there to feel comfortable treating them. And that's actually one of the reasons why you have a more problems with the people with intellectual disabilities. They're facing so many challenges. Their mothers are, bringing their kids to different appointments, different doctors. There are huge costs associated with that. And they're taking a lot of medications throughout the day that affect their oral health. And a lot of the mothers, and because of lack of cooperation of the child or other symptoms the child have that affect their behavior, that the oral hygiene, instead of being increased, is actually decreased. So we see this way too often. Every single day at the Eastman Dental, we are seeing kids with intellectual disability that often have their mouth oral health neglected for many years. And unfortunately, it costs a lot for the parents, costs a lot for the taxpayers, but more importantly, costs a lot for the well-being of their child.
Sometimes when people have an intellectual disability, it can be associated with anxiety. Is that part of the one of the factors, Dr. Elioff?
Oh, yeah, definitely. To approach this issue, we sometimes need to do the treatment under general anesthesia. And we have a long waiting list, unfortunately. We're trying to approach it. But in order to treat patients with special needs, we're having partnership with Golisano Foundation, with other group homes that we try to treat those patients. One of the smile mobiles that we have has a special unit that is designed to treat patients with special needs. So this is something we want to do more, as much as we can. We're thinking about even approaching the problem that Dr. Kurochi mentioned, to have a training program beyond what we have for our residents and students that are trained by us, to get additional training in treating patients with special needs. And we don't only talk about intellectual disabilities. Patients with systemic diseases that cannot be treated outside should be treated by trained dentists that have skills and know how to deal with it. We're trying to approach all those groups: geriatric patient with special needs, special with complex diseases. This is something that we'll see more and more, because people live longer with some background diseases with their teeth in their mouth. They don't lose their teeth, as you mentioned. We lose our teeth when we're getting old. It doesn't happen anymore. We want them to have teeth, healthy teeth, and we'll keep it, and the dentists are supposed to keep them healthy.
But it
I think it's interesting because you mentioned geriatric dentistry, and I that's something that I find interesting. We mentioned people with intellectual disabilities, probably something that they were born with or, you know, an issue from childhood, but dementia can set on in elderly age, and I would imagine, what is that association between dementia, geriatric dentistry, and that need, and then a person with dementia may not be as ready to see a dentist?
We have people that are trained to treat patients, older patients, and from the all aspect of being older patients. It can be dementia, but it can be hyposalivation. It can be other diseases that the patient have. They cannot have longer appointment because they are a little bit more in pain. There are many aspects. Dementia is one of them. It's not the only one. And we have to teach dentists how to approach those patients and provide them the best care we can.
Okay. We have a question from someone who called in and wrote in our question. That person asks, how safe is a root canal? And is there a big risk for an infection for the root canal? Dr. Ercoli, would you like to?
No, I would say that a root canal is actually very safe. If, of course, properly done, like anything in medicine and dentistry, the success rate of a root canal is in the high 90s, 95 and greater percent. So the listener should be reassured that that is a safe treatment. Actually, it is done to remove infection from within the tooth. And it's one of the successful treatment that certainly dentistry has in its armamentarium. So absolutely, don't be afraid of a root canal too often. You know, we're trying to associate, you know, oh, this is going to be bad as a root canal, which is actually a very bad association because actually they are quite successful if, you know, well done, of course. So I will not be afraid one bit.
I spoke to someone, a friend of mine, who had the choice between the root canal or a dental extraction. What are some of the things that people should be considering when they're making that decision?
Well, of course, every situation is slightly different, and you know, every patient should rely on the good advice of their dentist. In general terms, we do see if the tooth is maybe heavily damaged by previous cavities, or maybe has gum disease that has affected the support that the tooth has, then maybe the ability of not only the root canal, but the crown, the cap, as we will usually call it, to last for a long time, will be somehow impaired. Anyway, even if the tooth is extracted, we are always advocating, of course, a replacement of those teeth to certainly make sure that we do have a nice complement of teeth, not only to smile, but to function and chew, but also to have that social interaction that we said is very important, as we said before. And if I may add, actually, we are discussing about systemic, you know, links and connection. There is a vast body of evidence that connects, you know, periodontal disease, gum disease, to systemic health in general, to diabetes, both ways, heart disease, to preterm weight, preterm babies, and a low birth weight of the babies. So those are things that I think those are areas where certainly the connection between dentistry and medicine is there and should be, again, another encouragement to us to collaborate and encourage our patient to come to us as early as possible.
Dr. Croce, it looked like you wanted to chime in on that one.
Well, you know, I have a passion for to work with people with intellectual disability, and we talked before, and I just kind of want to go back to that. What Dr. Eliev said, you know, like here in the Western region here, we are fortunate we have all these resources and we still see a lot of unmet needs. We work with the Special Olympics and we go through events with the Special Olympics. And Special Olympics in the Calasano and Eastman has partner. Usually they have the residents of from Eastman going to the events and screen the patients there. And I just want to bring this up because we are there seeing the cream of the crop of people with intellectual disability to participate in the event, and you still see about 14% of the population with urgent need of dental care. We see 44% of them with untreated tooth decay, it's pretty much, you know, a time bomb there, waiting to affect the pulp and wait to have the person in pain. Almost 80% with the gum disease. So, you know, the need of collaboration, the need to expand and to provide a dental home for those patients is paramount. You know, it's not only the right thing to do, but it's something that we have to do in terms of cost and the well-being for the patients itself.
Now, it looks like we're getting a lot of phone calls. A lot of people have different questions. One of the questions that we just written into us, someone is asking if you can comment on the possibility of dry sockets following wisdom tooth extraction.
It can happen. It's one of the complications that we don't like.
Could you explain what that is?
If I knew, nobody really knows what's happening,
okay.
But it's inflammation of the bone. One of the theories is that the blood cloth does not exist and the healing process is interrupted. So it heals eventually, but it is very, very painful. There are some approaches to try and treat it after extraction, but it's very painful. It's not very common. Some people associated it with people that smoke after the extraction or do not follow all the instructions given by the dentist. But I've seen cases with dry socket, very painful. Eventually, it's resolved. The way to avoid it is to follow all the instructions and that the dentist provided. And it's not very common. It's very rare.
So, okay, we're going to try to follow all of the instructions for our dentist. But, I mean, what are some of the basic guidelines? So we're talking about brushing our teeth as if it's common knowledge. But, I mean, some people must not be. I mean, I'm imagining that there are some children that are not getting that lesson.
Well, certainly brushing your teeth twice a day and, of course, the magic word, flossing. Is very, very important. But I think that's only, one part of the equation. We have to think about our diet because we all have bacteria in our mouth by the billions. And, you know, we brush in the morning and by nighttime we're back to square one. So it's a constant battle. And some of that battle has to be fought on other fronts. For example, diet, snacking in between meals, especially with sugar-rich type of food, it's certainly a factor that will expose you to a greater presence of cavities. Use or abuse of, again, carbonated beverages, abuse of acidic sports drink has also been correlated with increased caries risk. So it's not only brushing, but it's a healthy lifestyle in general that has to be considered.
Okay. We are getting plenty of calls. We have Anna from the city. Anna, what's your question?
My question is, I'm looking for help for my 56-year-old son who is going to school right now. And I think I've exhausted everything. I've talked to the dental, Eastman Dental School. I've tried different doctors. I'm willing to pay for this. And I know he's got two very bad molars, one on each side, because he already had a swelling on the one side of his mouth, and I think it might be leading toward an abscess tooth. And I just heard that it's very dangerous to have these teeth, and I would like to know where I could call for an appointment for him. As I said, I am willing to pay for this.
And how old did you say your son is?
56.
56.
And he's going to school. He's between jobs and he's starting a new vocation.
Okay.
We will be very happy to help. We have our urgent care clinic, which can take care of the immediate need to reduce inflammation, infection, and help. And we have our dental clinics in Eastman Dental. We have in the downtown, if it's easier, in the Sibley building.
And perhaps I talked to the wrong person. He offered me nothing.
No.
Anna, I'll go ahead and set you back to our screener. Maybe we can take your information and I'll set you up with some of the doctors here in the room.
We will call you.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. So we have another question. It's asking about the health effects of people with a full set of dentures. We talked a little bit about mastication and whether or not you're getting enough nutrition. What else can we say about some of the health effects of having a full set of dentures?
Well, certainly some of the other effect, again, nutrition is probably a big one because, as I said, mastication and the choice of food will be affected. But the other component, of course, is relating also to the possibility of having fungal infection. You know, we all have candida in our body, and so let's say some individuals that constantly wear their dentures, they don't maybe clean them appropriately or take them out at night, that can cause some moderate to severe infection of the oral cavity that can actually progress down in the esophagus and in the stomach. So that can be actually a serious consequence. So again, following the direction of the dentist as far as, you know, cleaning the denture and maybe looking for alternatives, maybe removing the denture at night, certainly will be some positive steps. But I would say that the nutritional impact is certainly probably the most important one.
It's interesting that you mentioned that the risk of having some sort of a fungal infection, especially the candida infection with the dentures. Is there a risk of that with other prostheses you might have in your mouth, like, I don't know, a retainer or something like that?
Generally is more related to individuals having a denture. And, of course, for obvious reason of self-confidence, of lifestyle, marital status, you know, we don't want to take our teeth out. I wouldn't want to do it myself. And so those individuals are certainly more affected by the constant presence of the denture and, again, the potential of developing this candida infection. I would say it's probably less present, when you have a retainer. Although, again, if it is worn all the time, if it is not cleaned properly, if it is not maintained properly, that can happen as well. I would say that's probably instead not a problem when you have some form of fixed bridge work in your mouth, because, again, we will treat and clean that more like you do with your own teeth. So it's nothing that covers the mucosa, as we call it, you know, the lining that we have in our mouth.
Okay. So overall, we've been talking about all of the different health effects. What are some of the things that you think that we may have overlooked during this hour in the very short amount of time that we have left, Dr. Carucci?
Well, for the young population, we see a lot of teenagers, actually, that, you know, we talk about the best teenagers. They had follow all the instructions. The parents brought them to the clinic when they're young. And now they're out there, and now they're playing a lot of sports. And there, all of a sudden, they go to dentists a year later and have a lot of decay there. So Dr. Erkley mentioned about this. So it's a constant guard. So when you talk to your kids, when they're going to those sports games or practicing something, you want to have those sports drinks or Gatorades and all this stuff. You want to drink this in the beginning of the practice, throughout the day. Throughout the practice, you want to be drink just water, because every time you put anything in your mouth, you're going to expose your mouth to acidic environment created by bacteria. So, and keep brushing twice a day, and keep bringing to the dentist before you have a problem. You don't want to have experience with dentists only when you have a problem. Preventive care in dentistry is a lot more affordable and a lot more pleasant to the patient than you have to treat, you know, deep decay.
Yeah, it seems like we could talk a lot about, you mentioned sports drinks, you mentioned soft drinks. It seems like this is a big issue when it comes to especially our oral hygiene. There's been talk about that in a relationship with diabetes and other systemic disease.
No, certainly it is. And again, everything, you know, in life has to be done in moderation. Having a carbonated beverage is okay, but depends on how much, you know, how often, and so on. Answering your question, I think, one, we certainly would like to prevent dental problems from happening, but we do know that at times they do happen. And so I think one of the topic or one of the areas that is a large part of dentistry, certainly the replacement of teeth. And in this sense, I would say dental implants has been, you know, a major breakthrough. And in fact, we were very, very fortunate to be one of the five test centers in North America back in the mid-80s, where this technology was actually then moved to any dental practice. So we were very fortunate as student to be here at that time and, of course, take advantage of that knowledge. So, but I think that's very important.
So overall, we've been talking about the importance of our oral health. If someone wants to get a hold of Eastman, Dr. Ilyov, can someone get a hold of Eastman, and what are kind of the services that they should be considering as we say goodbye for the hour?
Okay, we have our clinic. What do you have? The number? we have our clinic in downtown. We have clinic in the University of Rochester. We have clinics in Highland Hospital. We are available to help and support patients as much as they need.
We've been speaking with Dr. Ilyov, Dr. Ercoli, and Dr. Carocci, all from Eastman Institute of Oral Health. Thank you all for joining us for this hour. We've been talking about oral health here on Healthy Friday from Connections, from member-supported public radio.